Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez, Patty Vasquez.
From global conflicts to greenhouse gases, the folks refusing to wear masks says, and politicians getting caught grabbing asses says, she's driving it home with Patty Vasquez.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. What a gorgeous day in Chicago. I feel like I've said that a lot lately, and I was thinking about it on the way here today. I'm like, man, when it starts getting cold and nasty and rainy and all that stuff, am I going to say it's a nasty day? And I'm going to have to find reasons that every day is wonderful. I'm so happy to be back. I took the day off yesterday because I was filming an episode of Chicago Fire. I have a small recurring role as a nurse, and I had such a blast on the set. I have to tell you, we are so lucky, and it's luck, but it's also a lot of hard work. It's also the incentives that the state of Illinois has presented to so many filmmakers and TV showrunners, production companies, and there's this incredible these sound stages and our studios at Cinescape on the south side, bringing in so many workers from all over the city of Chicago, food vendors, and it was amazing because I've been on lots in studio lots in Los Angeles, and I was laughing yesterday because it's over at 17th and Rockwell, right about there. And I was watching some of the workers break down the equipment, and there's just such a Chicago-ness of our studios that I absolutely love. I love that we have so many opportunities for performers, for writers, for showrunners, for crew, for all these union jobs. And it was just an honor to be on that set again. And I was laughing because as I walked into the makeup trailer, they had a still shot of me from my audition, which was about 5 or 6 years ago. And I've done this role 4 times. And it was a still shot of me with kind of this smirk on my face. And I laughed and I said, oh, it looks like they basically were going through all the pictures and they were like, where's that one that has attitude? And when I talked to the director, he goes, yeah, he goes, a lot of the nurses that we cast are very kind and they're very gentle. And he goes, you come into a room and you are no BS. And that was what we needed for this episode. It is the third time I play this nurse where I'm throwing people out of a room. And one of the actors turned to me. He goes, man, you were born to be a mean nurse. I think it's a compliment. I like to think it's a compliment. So that's where I was yesterday, and I did get to hear Eric's show. Eric Zorn was here sitting in for me yesterday, and it was a great conversation. I thought that was so compelling, the story that he was talking about in the second half hour about this case of murder. That's a podcast as well, and I really loved hearing him break down that story as well as the Laquan McDonald shooting in the wake of the appointment or the nomination of Rahm Emanuel as the ambassador for Japan. And I thought it was a great conversation yesterday. Always great to hear Eric's thoughts on a wide range of subjects, just like it's great to hear your thoughts on a wide range of subjects. So we would love for you to call 773-763-WCPT. That's 773-763-9278. We would love to hear your lovely voices, but you can text us as well. And right now we've got Brian on the line from Joliet. Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you, Patty. How are you?
I'm in a really good mood today. Thank you so much.
Well, great.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Excellent.
And, we just passed Labor Day. We mm-hmm. just got through celebrating Labor Day, and I saw two very important documentaries on the history of the labor movement mm-hmm. and unionism, and both were on PBS, WTTW.com, Chicago, and one was called Haymarket, The Bomb, The Anarchist, The Union Struggle, mm-hmm. and the other, The Revolutionist, Eugene V. Debs, and I think you know, what happened, what has happened to the labor movement and unionism in the United States since 1981 and Reagan and the Reagan administration's attacks on the unions still affect us to this day in terms of our health care crisis, in terms of getting a livable minimum wage, and I think it was about 40% in the late 70s of the workforce were in unions.
Yeah.
And I think today it's like 6% only.
It's,
I think today we need great union leaders like the great Cesar Chavez of the United Farm Workers, people like that.
We do need somebody that that inspires, or we need many people that inspire. And you bring up a really great point, which I think in a way lends itself to our conversation that we're going to be having in just a little bit with Terry Cosgrove, the president and CEO of Personal Pack, which is there are so many things that we've gone along with and just thinking everything's okay when it comes to labor that, well, look, we've got, you know, safer working environments than we did 120 years ago or 140 years ago. We have, you know, whether it's safe environments, we don't have children working. We have the hour, whether breaks and the minimum wage, but we haven't been holding the line when it comes to that, the protecting the voices at work, expanding union membership, having bargaining rights in so many different areas. And the thing is, and if you're not in a union, and if you're in the kind of company, I mean, as you mentioned, only 6%, the rights of workers have diminished so much. We can talk about toxic workplaces. When women or men report sexual harassment, they're marginalized, they're retaliated against, because there's no one there to fight for them. Human resources are for the company, not for the workers. It's human resources. We are the resource. We're capital to a lot of these companies. And you're right. We need to make sure we're fighting for laborers every single day.
Well, what happened, and I think you're 100% correct, Patty, as usual. You say, I think what happened, you know, going back to the early 80s and such, and mid 80s, that the unions across America just didn't stick together.
Right. I know. Well, you know, interests become interests. And who you align with, it depends on what your needs, what, you know, what your special interests are at that moment. By the way, someone just texted me and said, don't forget, a lot of people aren't even able to get virus safety at work right now. That's one of the things that we're going back and forth about, is whether what the mandates or requirements or whatever language we use to make sure that labor is safe. But we also, a lot of unions are pushing back on those requirements. And I'm concerned about places where we have congregate living, when we have individuals who have developmental disabilities or senior citizens, that we have workers that don't want to get vaccinated. And that's disconcerting for me. So it's a lot of push and pull. But ultimately, we do have to make sure that labor is stronger and that that voice is protected at work.
And the major unions that are still left also need to keep in mind helping out what you would call today's temporary temp workers and part-time workers, and helping them, you know, form unions.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Every place we can, we should. That's what I'm saying. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you so much, Patty.
Of course.
And you have a great day.
You as well. Be safe. Be well. And I'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you. Talk to you soon. Bye. We've got Roosevelt on the line. Hey, Roosevelt. How are you doing?
Patty.
Yes.
Okay. So did you hear what happened in Mexico?
No.
Three different things happened in Mexico.
Oh, about abortion?
About abortion?
Uh-huh. Tell folks.
Acapulco got hit with an earthquake.
Oh, I have Mexico resort city rattled by deadly earthquake. I had not heard that. I feel like I've been under a rock for the last 24 hours.
And I'm going to give you an exclusive. I was going to call you yesterday about this. So they brought down the statue. What was it, in Virginia, Richmond?
Of General Lee, yes.
Yeah, well, what did make the radar in the news cycle was that they brought down the statue of Christopher Columbus, Mexico City. That statue's been there, I believe, since 1877.
Wow.
At the Paseo de la Reforma, which is right smack in the middle of Mexico City.
Isn't that, it's in a roundabout, isn't it? Or it was?
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I've seen it, yep.
Paseo, very famous. It's a, you know, tourism. There's a lot of tourism. And they had protests. I believe there were students from college,
mm-hmm.
and they brought it down. And in the place of Christopher Columbus's statue, there's going to be a woman, Aztec woman, I believe. So... what do you think about that?
I'm thrilled to hear that, because you know what? It shows that progress is not only possible, it's necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I told my mom, goes, you know, like years ago, I go, you want to see, because I don't know if you're familiar, that Oklahoma gave back a lot of the Native American treaties that were broken in Oklahoma, and I believe close to half of the state is in the hands of Native Americans now.
Wow, that's remarkable. Wow.
So
I gotta learn a lot more. There's a lot more. I'm so glad you're giving me the heads up on these things.
Yeah. And, you know what? And these statues, I don't know what took so long. That's my point. I'm talking about here in the United States.
Oh, we know. All the don't erase our history. A statue is not history. It's symbolism, and it's often used for nationalism or for the goals of those who want to control others. And many, not all of them. It's not always a tribute or an honor. It is often, you know, a lot of those statues were erected during the Jim Crow laws in order to intimidate and to show the power of white supremacy. And we can go on and on about all the different situations in which many of these statues were erected.
Are you familiar? I'm going to switch over. It's similar. I'm going to switch over to music.
Okay. Oh, no. You can't.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Roosevelt. Go ahead.
It's in the same realm of what we're talking about. Are you familiar with the give and take or the you know, the music of Lynyrd Skynyrd? Remember that song that dedicated to, or not dedicated, to Neil Young, and then Neil Young with the song "Southern Man."
Okay,
and then "Sweet Home Alabama."
Uh huh.
That was Neil Young. Remember they mentioned that? Well, that's in regards to the South. And let's not forget. I know I'm all over the place. Let's not forget,
I'm trying to track. Go ahead.
Let's not forget that January 6th, the Confederate flag made it all the way to Capitol Hill.
Oh, so, it all the way too in. It was that, yeah, we saw someone running through the hallways with it. Yep.
Thank you for correcting me. Yes.
No, I'm not correcting you. I'm adding to the story. It's not a correction.
No. My criticism is what took so long. You know what I'm saying? We're in the 2021. However, I'm stealing some of Joan's words. Mexico's gone ahead as far as the abortion issue.
Decriminalizing it, uh-huh.
And we're going backwards, thanks to State of Texas.
Yeah, that's why I'm excited to talk to our friend Terry Cosgrove. So I'm gonna get the Tim and Dave's call so I can get him in here. Sound good?
Yep.
Excellent.
I'll let you go, and I took a lot of your time. Sorry.
It's all good. Thank you so much, Roosevelt. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Have a
good
day.
Take care. You too. We've got Dave from Hoffman Estates. Hey, Dave, what do you want to say?
Hey, Patty. Yeah, I was telling Lady B earlier about the, just read a story today that's come out of, in California, where someone or some group, whatever, severely vandalized flags hung on the Southern California freeway overpass to honor the 13 U.S. service members killed in the suicide bombing at Afghanistan Kabul Airport. And the citizen reported the damage to the 13 American flags and the Marine Corps flag that were attached to a fence on a bridge over the State Route 91 freeway in the city of Riverdale, or Riverside, excuse me. And local, you know, police said that the social media post Tuesday, they got a picture of it and they showed them. And they took those flags down and they were turned over to a Boy Scout troop to be proper, you know, retirement of those flags. But
right. That's a shame.
I mean, they're not even gone barely 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, that's...
And we're sitting there, you know, and they're sitting there vandalizing.
I think we have to continue to find ways to honor the men and women who lost their lives in that bombing, as well as over the last 20 years, because there's a lot of repayment that needs to be done there somehow.
Yeah, and add on to your with the statues and stuff. I wonder when Virginia's going to go to the highways next, because if you the National Marine Corps Museum in Triangle, Virginia, the highway's name is the Jefferson Davis Highway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, jeez.
Because, I mean, if they ain't going after that stuff, some of this stuff is just kind of a red herring to me.
Exactly. You know, that's what they love is you know, what do they call it? Stirring up the snowflakes and I don't know. It's It's a sunny day in Chicago.
Well, I just thought I'd give you that little heads up on that thing about the vandalizing there because I hadn't heard no news people talk about it yet.
Yeah, I had not heard that. I'll take a look at those stories. Thank you, Dave.
All right. Be well.
You too. Thank you so much. Before we go to the break, we've got Tim who wants to call and talk about unions. What's on your mind, Tim?
Well, I think that unions do not do a good enough job in explaining to people what the benefits are to being in a union. They do too much peripheral things. They do this, that, the other thing, and social justice this and social justice that. But if I were to give you $600 and you were to give me back $2,000, would that not be worth me giving you $600?
That's a good point.
Yes or no?
Yes, it would be.
Okay, with a union, you're guaranteed that. When you join a union, people think, oh my gosh, you're taking this money out of my paycheck. And it's like, no, I'm adding this money to your paycheck.
Right.
So when you're a union member, you give $25 a check, $15 a check, or whatever it is. Let's just say it adds up to $600 a year. And then if you get a $1 an hour raise, you know, 4 or 5% of your pay raise, then you get $2,000 more a year, $2,080 to be exact, not counting overtime. So this is what unions don't seem to understand, the return on investment to being in a union and the help it does to your individual family and yourself is absolutely catastrophically better than not being in a union. Not to mention the fact that you now have all sorts of other rights.
It's hard
security
to break.
You can't be fired. No.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to, you're right, it's hard to measure for folks and play it out there for them. But yeah, maybe you're right. Your return on investment, like you were just saying, safety in the workplace, retirement, healthcare, all those things. I agree. We've got to figure out a way. We got to do better marketing.
Well, no, the unions just have to, union individuals have to think a little more outside the box to their members.
Yep.
I mean, when there's, you know, let's say you have 50,000 members, there's not going to be 50,000 progressive, you know, people in your union. There's going to be 18,000.
Right.
Well, what do you do with the other 32,000? I mean, this is what unions have to do. Just talk to people where they're at. Take care of your family. Take care of yourself. Take care of your economic world. And then guess what? You're helping out your coworker, and your coworker is helping out you. You two are helping out most two more people. It's that exponential thing that unions don't seem to understand to talk to people where they're at.
Right.
They talk about this, and they talk about that, and they talk about this person's rights, and those groups' rights, and this thing's rights, and we need cleaner water, and all that kind of stuff. You know what? If you can't pay your bills, you're just going to go get a job. And this is what unions got to understand, that people are going to take care of themselves first. I mean, tonight when you go home, you're not going to be worried about what I'm doing for dinner. You're going to be worried about what you're doing for dinner. And this in turn is what unions have to think about. It's how do people think about themselves and their own struggle?
Yes.
And then that's everybody else is exactly the same. So we're all in this together, so to speak.
Right.
And this is where it has to change. That's
my
perspective. And I'm in a union.
Someone hired Tim to do some of the consulting. Have a great night, Tim. I appreciate that insight, and you're absolutely right about that. It's your return on investment. Yep, meet people where they are. That's always a good way to go. Have a great night. Thank you. I got to run for a break because we got Terry Cosgrove coming in studio. Let's have a conversation. You know, we've been complacent in many ways when it comes to reproductive rights, bodily autonomy. Let's have a conversation about not just Texas, but what we can do across the state of Illinois and across the country. More in a moment on Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez.
Patty Vasquez is taking your calls now at 773-763-9278. Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez now on WCPT 820.
Yeah. Here at WCBT, we know you wouldn't storm the Capitol to start a riot. So instead, we'd like to send you to Riot Fest. Sign up at the WCBT 820 Club contest page at WCBT820.com before 9 a.m. this Friday for your chance to win a pair of four-day passes. Riot Fest is in Douglas Park September 16th through the 19th. Riot Fest is requiring proof of vaccination or negative COVID test to enter the park. Tickets are still available at riotfest.org. See WCBT820.com for contest rules.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez.
In your communities in Chicago.
On WCPT 820.
You are listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez. I'm your host, and I'm so excited to welcome to our studios Terry Cosgrove, who is the president and CEO of Personal Pack. And I just to reset this a little bit, because it's been a while since we've talked. We were on the phone a few months ago, mm-hmm. To talk about parental consent. Was it right. Is it consent?
Notice. But notice. It's the parental same notice. Thing to the... To, it's very clear. It's the exact same thing to the young woman, because the issue is... The person who abused her, or her violent parent, or whatever, or neighbor, finds out. So to her, consent, notice, it's all the same thing.
Right. Once, there is a reason why a young woman or a girl will need to seek termination of a pregnancy. And in Illinois, they were not able to move the ball on that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there will be a different sense of urgency as we head into the fall and the and next spring, the General Assembly.
I certainly, and many pro-choice voters in the Illinois, I see a huge sense of urgency because literally within 18 hours of the Texas law, young women were coming to Illinois for their abortion care and have been doing every single day with numbers increasing. And it is absolutely outrageous and inhumane that a young woman from Texas who is escaping violence, escaping sexual assault, escaping that situation, comes to Illinois and she's told, I'm sorry, we have this horrible right-wing anti-choice inspired law that's been on the books since 1995. And so you need to go find a judge, you need to go to court, or you need to tell your violent parent or possibly the man who raped you that to let them know that you've come to Illinois to get an abortion. I mean, it's absolutely inhumane. And everyone listening to the show needs to call their state senator and state representative and demand that this law that harms so many young women is repealed.
Right, because now we can also help women outside of the boundaries of Illinois.
And the other aspect of this, too, is that undocumented young women, the last place they want to find themselves is in front of a judge, in a courthouse. You know, it's so untenable. It is so cruel and unimaginable that this law is still on the books in Illinois. 13 states do not have any kind of parental involvement laws, and Illinois needs to be the 14th. We can't stand up and call ourselves this great pro-choice state as long as this law is on the books and we are doing this horrible stuff to young women. We just can't do it. And I'm not going to sit around anymore and be quiet about it. Yes.
I thought as much. That's why I was like, I messaged you. I was like, come in next week.
We did wonderful things. We passed because of the Reproductive Health Act and HB 40, we don't have a trigger law. We are protected in Illinois, regardless what the Supreme Court does. But it doesn't do any good when there are all these young women in our state and those that are coming. I mean, Indiana is going to take up the Texas law. So we're going to have all these young women from Indiana. They're going to have no place to go. They're going to have to go here. You know, New York is a lot farther than Illinois is to Indiana. And and so we really we can't hold ourselves up as this great beacon for reproductive rights until this law is repealed. It's that clear.
And Colorado is one of the states that also has very progressive protections for women's reproductive rights.
Not exactly.
Really?
I mean, really, Patty, there was a I should have sent it to you.
No, don't worry about it.
No, I think I did email it to you.
I can find it.
But there was a map in the Washington Post like 2 or 3 days ago, and they had the states in purple that were that proactively enshrine reproductive rights in their state law. And literally what's so stunning about this map, you look at the East Coast, there's 5 or 6 states, New York, Connecticut, Vermont, Maine, and 1 or 2 others. Then on the West Coast, you have California, Oregon, Washington, and believe it or not, Nevada. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that the entire state governor is controlled by women in Nevada, Democratic women, and they've been added to lists. And then there is nothing else between those two coasts except one state, and it is Illinois, and it's sitting right there in the middle of the country in purple. I mean, that's where we're at. But those other states that are purple, they don't have parental notice restrictions.
See?
And we do here, though. So we need to earn that purple spot in the middle of the country.
Exactly. We got a lot of work to do. We're hanging out with Terry Cosgrove. He's the president and CEO of Personal Pack. I know that folks have questions and comments, so give us a call or text us at 773-763-9278. We'll find out how we can join the fight for women's autonomy, for human autonomy. This is a human right. More in a moment on WCPT, Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez.
Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive on WCPT Willow Springs, is powered by ComEd. Lower your energy bills and reduce your carbon footprint with the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program.
Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez.
In your communities in Chicago
on WCPT 820.
We are hanging out with Terry Cosgrove, the president and CEO of Personal Pack. And on their website, they say that this was the worst year for reproductive rights in the history of our country.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the worst ever?
Yes, yes. More bills, more laws. I mean, horrible. I mean, Texas is really the tip of the iceberg. I mean, Arkansas passed a law that says life begins at conception, which for people that aren't paying attention, this is a religious definition of conception. It's not a scientific definition, which means that most forms of the birth control pill and the IUD will become murder weapons under these. And this is really
their interpretation.
Yes, in their interpretation, but they're enshrining it into law. I mean, that is the You know, it's so frustrating because for years I've been talking about the right-wing agenda, and everyone thought it was just about abortion. You know, and really, abortion is the money raiser for that.
Yes,
yeah, that's the
guns and abortion.
Exactly, and if you go to any anti-choice website, every single one of them opposes birth control, and they call it, and they have their people whipped up. They call it an abortifacient. They call it the pill. In fact, we have someone on record from a recent demonstration at a Personal Pack event who said outright that the pill is a murder weapon, the birth control pill, because by then you're in IVF. You know, any embryos that aren't used in IVF, you're killing a human being. So they want that outlawed, and they want most forms of birth control taken away, the most commonly used forms of birth control, the IUD and the birth control pill. So, and then in Arkansas, any man can stop a woman from getting an abortion, can sue her and stop her from doing it, get an injunction, or else sue her for money. And after the Texas law, there won't be anything to prevent vigilantes from turning in women who use birth control. I mean, this is we are in a very, a few years ago, I never dreamed it would be this serious.
That's what I was going to ask you.
And, you know, to point out, the Texas law is no exception for rape and incest. When I started at Personal Pack 30 years ago, the anti-abortion movement didn't dare introduce a bill in Springfield or in the United States Congress that didn't have an exception for rape and incest. It was a given. Mm-hmm. And they have moved so far, and they are so radical now, that there's not an exception for a woman's health. So a woman has, you know, high blood pressure, she's diabetic, she's 40 years old, and a doctor says to her, you know, you have an 80% chance of getting a massive stroke, of having a massive stroke. She has to decide for herself whether she wants to carry the pregnancy to term or seek to terminate in order to take care of the three existing children that she has, which has happened to me when I was counseling someone as a social worker. And this poor woman is sitting in front, and all I can think of, I wish every single person in the world could walk in these shoes right now.
Yes.
Because here's this woman faced with having to make the decision, and no one should be making it for her except herself. And if she decides to carry this pregnancy to term, that's her business. If she decides to terminate it, that's her business. But it should be her decision and no one else's.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When I started, obviously a lot of us were caught off guard. I did not see see. I mean, I see it coming in the sense that this didn't happen overnight.
Right,
and like
no.
you said, this radicalism on the right has been going on for a while, and it wasn't just about abortion, and it, you know, it is about civil rights. It you know, there's so much of it that when we did not maintain a separation between church and state, mm-hmm. when you know when they wouldn't believe Anita Hill, you know, when even President Biden was dismissive of what she wanted to say, that's how we end up with Clarence Thomas. And that also emboldened the people that put him on that bench, people like Mark Pauletta, who now are the lawyers in D.C. They got Kavanaugh, Gorsuch and Coney Island, whatever her name is, yeah. on the bench. I mean, that's where we are now.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
was the long game. We, you know, we got Roe v. Wade. We were, you know, we have our fights along the way.
Right.
But they were masterful then also with the images. You tell stories that are significant. They're important. They're emotional. But they're not the same as the images that these people are willing to put on billboards and in front of, you know, in front of clinics, and that pulls it, you know, that they manipulate through emotion in a way that we can't even saying that.
Well, we can, Patty, and this is it's been so frustrating that Democrats take this bunker mentality when it comes to reproductive rights, and Republicans have used it, and Democrats have basically run away from it. I see it all the time in
campaigns. It's too complicated. They don't want the backlash.
They don't want to talk about it, now they're playing catch up politically.
Right.
And it took something like Texas to all of a sudden say, oh, you know, we better pay attention to this. Look what's going on. Women are really upset. Yeah, they are. And so are a lot of men, I might add, because this is a very serious blow. I mean, I think it's important for people to understand that close to 40% of American women will have an abortion in their lifetime. This is not an odd, you know, here and there procedure. This is the most medically sought after procedure in the United States and by the way, around the world. Abortion is the number one medical procedure that is performed. And for this attack to take place, particularly, I know when you were on the radio, I mean, Ireland 3 years ago legalized abortion. Mexico has decriminalized it. Italy, I mean, Spain, all these Catholic countries. I mean, the United States is literally standing alone among the industrialized nations is going backwards when all these other countries are going forward. And it's because we've allowed it to happen. We didn't engage in the political process. And don't even get me started about had Hillary Clinton been president, how different things would have been.
Well, she called all of this.
I know that. I read that article.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and Mitt Romney, he was saying that he was going to basically dismantle Planned Parenthood.
Right.
That was part of what he was running on. And what was that, 12, 2012?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this was something they were whipping up the bait. And, you know, I think that part of it was that we were like, well, they do this with the NRA. They do this with it's for raising money.
Right.
They were serious about this. And Pence,
right.
who was, as you talked about, Indiana, you know, they wanted proof that there was a miscarriage and not an abortion. They wanted burial fees
right.
and all
right.
that. And so
right.
women started sending their tampons. Here's
right.
one that didn't make it.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. It was periods for Pence. Yeah. It was the name of the campaign.
Yeah, it was.
Yes.
It is astounding to me. Now, you also sent me an article because in Texas, this one talks about how the abortion law, how sinister it is. It goes all the way back to the fugitive slave law. And this is about how they would deputize people. They would, for money, they would say, hey, if you see anybody that you think is a runaway slave, let us know. And they also were deputized to also commit violence against.
Yes, and they were paid. I mean, there were the bounty was that you got, there was a bounty on slaves' heads, and they were, when they were brought in, you know, if they were runaway slaves or didn't make it, to wherever they were going. And also people who helped, like in the Underground Railroad, could be held responsible. So this, I mean, that article that I sent you, yeah, it was really shocking with Michelle Goodwin showing the, it's not a complete analogy, but showing the similarities between the Fugitive Slave Act from the 1800s and what's going on in Texas. It's very, very close to it.
And I really, because I've never been able to be in the mental space of these folks who are so driven and they're radicalized by it. I mean, this is something that Phyllis Schlafly really benefited from. This is how she galvanized all the religious groups. You know, she threw that out there as like what feminists want to do, all this stuff. And it is it's something that whips the folks into a frenzy based on religion. And it doesn't it's so infuriating that this is where we are, that women don't have their own autonomy. And when I talk about that, folks, that also means, like, look, if Terry found out that he was, if he did not have a bone marrow transplant, he will die. And if I'm the only person in the entire world that was a match for him, but I'm not going to give it to him, then I apparently don't value your life enough. If they held me down and took my bone marrow and forced me to give it to you, is the same thing as forcing somebody to go through with a birth. That's they're not, the language is what bothers me. They're pro-birth, 100%.
Right,
that's it.
Right.
There's nothing.
Absolutely.
There's nothing pro-life about them whatsoever.
Right.
And
right.
They can call in and make other claims. But unless you move off of this, then you are not pro-life.
Right. And they're not, you know, to a greater extension of that, if they, it's hard to take them seriously in self-labeling themselves pro-life when you go to Springfield and you see the same people that are arguing against sex ed, arguing against birth control, arguing against abortion, are then showing up at the same committee hearing, you know, 5 minutes later, arguing against increased funding for education, for housing, for healthcare, we have some of the highest maternal death rates. I mean, Texas and Georgia have some of the highest maternal death rates, 8 times higher for African American women. I mean, and they don't care about that at all. I mean, it doesn't matter. So, you know, the hypocrisy is so laid bare with them. And also, I mean, what drives me crazy is when people talk, oh, why can't the two sides get together? I mean, we know how to dramatically reduce the abortion rate. Not that there's anything wrong with abortion. Abortion is health care. But for those on the other side who say that they want to reduce the abortion rate, we know Governor Hickenlooper made contraception of a woman's choice free for 5 years for anyone that wanted it. And you know what happened? The abortion rate dropped by 50%. The teenage pregnancy rate dropped by a little over 50%. And on top of it, the economic benefit for the number of lower income women that were able to finish high school and go to college and have the, and then provide, be able to provide the economic support that they would need to raise a family and bring children into the world and in a healthy, productive way. And we, you know, over and over, I say, when women are allowed to time and space and plan their pregnancies, the outcomes are astronomical in terms of society, in terms of healthy births, and everything you want to measure. It's right there. But the other side will not let us go there. And, I mean, just the teenage pregnancy rate in the United States, even though it's dropping dramatically, we still outpace other countries by 10, 15, 20 times.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is time for Democrats to have the strength of will to have these conversations.
Right.
It's always, you know, I've been in Springfield when, you know, I've heard legislators talk about how they've had to talk to their, I get it. They have talked to their pastor, you know, straighten that out. But the thing is, I get it. But if you're talking about your religion and your relationship with God, then you're making this a crusade, because this is not, if I'm your constituent, I don't agree with you. And I'm asking you that if just one constituent needs that health care, that's all it should take. That should be all it takes.
Yeah. And I know Catholic legislators have basically, when they've been confronted by their priests, they basically say, sorry, you know, I'm,
God forgives me.
Well, no, not God forgives me. I come here, you know, I come here for my religious practice, which is separate from what I do in Springfield.
Right.
And by the way, I'm never coming back to your church.
Right.
I mean, that's what people need to say. I mean, look what Biden did. He has stood up to the Catholic Church. I mean, they have gone after him over and over. And he just ignores them. You know, that's all you have to do. It's just they don't have any. And tell them they have no place in telling you what to do when it comes to your official duties. So you have a right to protect the Constitution, the right to privacy, the separation of church and state, and all of it. That's your number one duty. Yeah.
It is absolutely the duty is to serve.
And every single person I know, state representative, senator, who has had that conversation with their priest, you know what? They leave them alone. They leave them alone.
They didn't make any headway.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. And they say, okay, they had their say, and they leave them alone. And it's when you kind of hide and you bow and scrape and you apologize. And, you know, there's like blood in the water for sharks, you know, when you stand up to them. You know, like when you stand up to bullies, you know, guess what? They're not bullies anymore. They back down.
Yeah, I've seen that happen in person. Yeah. I can't wait to see how that works out tomorrow. The 28th annual awards luncheon from Personal Pack is on Wednesday, October 20th. And this sounds amazing. They have keynote speaker, U.S. Senator and Pastor Raphael Warnock, which is speaking of pastors.
Yes.
And this is all online. Let's talk about this when we come back. But I want everyone to know about this as an event that I'm excited to participate in, well, to watch and hear these incredible speeches. It's Wednesday, October 20th, and it's going to be a blast. I can't wait for this. It's go to personalpack.org. That's personalpack.org. And this is a way for you to have conversations with folks, to hear what their thoughts are, how we're going to galvanize our forces to make sure that we get rid of parental notice in the state of Illinois. Coming back in just a moment on Driving Home with Patty Vasquez, we're in studio with Terry Cosgrove, the president and CEO of Personal Pack.
Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive.
I don't know about you, but when I'm really tired, when I work a lot, I get a little edgy. I don't want my police officers being a little edgy and being exhausted and having their patience run dry. If there was ever a profession that needed patience, it was being a cop.
Joan Esposito, weekday afternoons 2 to 5 on WCPT 820.
In your communities, in Chicago,
on WCPT 820.
I'm having a great time in studio with Terry Cosgrove that I keep forgetting to hit the right buttons. You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez. And again, Terry Cosgrove, the president and CEO of Personal Pack. And I do think that people want to know what can they do. I know that there are groups online that are planning marches and things like that. You mentioned earlier, call your state senator and your state representative. Tell them to work on parental notice and taking that off the books.
Right. And I know that not a lot of people know who their state representative and their state senator is, and there is a solution to that problem. And considering that only, I think, 21% of people know who their representative of Congress is, it's not surprising that only 7% of people know, even though I think your listeners are probably the most educated. But just in case you're unsure, you can go to the Personal Pack website, and we have a finder to find your state representative, senator. And with that, it will give you their phone number, their email.
Oh, perfect.
We also have a website, PNAaction.org, or you can go to the State Board of Elections if you like, and you put in your address there. It's called Find Your Representatives in Government, and you put your address in, pops up who your representative to Congress is, who your state rep is, your state senator, give you all their information, their address, their phone number, their email. So I would encourage people to do that. Do not be intimidated by not knowing. You are not alone. It is shocking the number of people that I are friends with, and I know who I am. So who's, you know, stupidly me, just like because I kind of have it memorized.
Right.
Who's your state representative? And they kind of go, oh, I'm not sure. I think I voted for. And I say, don't worry about it. Just, you know, there's the information. So long story short, the information is very, very available to you.
I think going to Personal Pack is the best way because while you're there, you can find out more about the work that you do.
Right. And join our email list. Follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, and you know, get involved, and because people can do so much. You know, obviously we're a pack, we need financial support, but in addition to that, or as part of that, is becoming active citizens. And I used to say elections have consequences. Now I say elections have enormous consequences.
Yes, they do.
And that elections have really important consequences. I mean, we're here. You know, it's interesting. I've been listening. I know this is off topic, but
please.
But, you know, I've been listening to all these people talk about how do we deal with climate change, you know,
right.
and all the devastation from that. And in all of it, there no one is saying vote the people out of office who don't believe it's real. I mean, the reason why we're in the reason why we're in the situation we are is because there are too many people in public office who are climate change deniers and don't want to, and as a result of that, don't want to take the actions that we need to take in order to save the planet. To me, it's so obvious. I feel sometimes I'm like the only person,
the
only person in the room, like banging my head against the wall or something.
Well, I love.
And,
go ahead.
And ironically, but not coincidentally, those are the same people that are anti-choice, mm-hmm. that, you know, don't believe in any kind of gun safety, that are against union rights, of course, and everything that most people that are of common sense believe, as well as, of course, attacking LGBTQ rights and, you know, the whole agenda. I mean, there would be so much value in getting rid of, and we have to get rid of all of them, just... Most of them.
Right.
You know,
we have a couple for balance.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's balance.
Yeah.
It's just really
it's kind
out of whack. I have to say something. I've always loved your passion. From the moment I met you at the Evanston 4th of July parade and had you on my other my show at the other station. Now you have to leave it in the still daylight.
Yeah.
I am so thrilled that you are a fellow alumni. And
yes.
This is where you started doing the work, was at the University of Illinois.
Yes.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where was your first dorm?
Illinois Street Residence.
ISR. Are you at ISR?
Yeah.
All right.
What about you?
I was at Allen Hall.
Oh, my God. I loved Allen Hall.
So
all the progressives lived there.
Yes,
and we did. And there were Allen Hall Residency. I had so many friends that were at Allen Hall.
You would have loved Allen Hall.
ISR, I know.
I went there for my freshman orientation.
Right.
I stayed at ISR. And there were... Terry, there were flying cockroaches in the shower room.
Really?
Oh, so,
okay.
It's an older building. These are all older buildings at the University of Illinois, but it was still probably
Allen
fun.
Allen Hall was much older. It was one of the original.
So that's right. But they updated it, I think.
Yeah.
Well,
the funny thing was about Illinois Street Residence is I was a political science major. I know that's shocking to people
listening.
But almost all the guys in the dorm were engineering students because an engineering campus was across the street.
Right.
So I don't know how I got stuck there, but none of them could write a paper or do
really?
Anything. Yeah. And
that's amazing.
And I would have pro ERA and pro choice stickers on my door and everything. And I was like this odd duck one story I want to tell you about that I really appreciated in the 82 remap, State Representative Helen Sarathwaite. Now this is going back a long time. She was drawn into a district with a Republican. The Republicans drew the map that mm-hmm. year. And I was a deputy register, and I only registered all of the women in Wardall Hall, which was the women's side of Illinois Street Residence. And Denny Bing, the county clerk, threatened me and said he was going to take away my registration if I didn't start registering men. And I said, well, Denny, we haven't passed the Equal Rights Amendment yet. I have no legal obligation. I said, pass the Equal Rights Amendment, and I am more than happy to register men. But until then, I'm going to register.
That's outstanding.
You know, well, I'm just going to register women. I registered a few thousand women, and Helen won the beat the...
Go figure.
Yeah.
That's some grassroots stuff right there.
Yeah, so we learned grassroots organizing at a very young age.
The University of Illinois campus, we should take a road trip.
You wouldn't even recognize it when I go back now.
Like the condos downtown on
Green Street. You wouldn't even recognize it. Yeah.
I have an idea.
Yes, what's it?
Now you've inspired me to maybe two trips, but I talked to the station and I've had this dream for a long time. You mentioned that people don't usually know who their legislators are.
Right.
I want to do, just like when we were kids, a field trip to Springfield. We go, we watch a legislative session. We meet with people, meet their legislators mm-hmm. in their offices. Mm-hmm. And we go to the presidential library. We hang out. I don't know if what's a good place anymore, Boone's or wherever. But
one of the things you have to put on the list is the 2-block street that Abe Lincoln's house is on. I mean, I just discovered it recently. Now I'm I know. I've been going to Springfield for, 40 years? And I've stayed at the Abe, which is 2 blocks mm-hmm. away. And in April, this is so embarrassing. I was walking around and I found it. With Abe Lincoln's house is right there. That whole street has been completely
preserved.
It's an amazing piece of history. Yeah.
When Trump won and I was going on to Springfield during the budget impasse, I used to just go walking down that's recontemplating our country and our history and all of that. Well, Terry, I have to run.
Yes.
I want to make sure people know about this event coming up on the 20th of October. So let's have you back before this.
Yes.
And you're going to have Norman Lear's being honored.
Lifetime Achievement Award at 99 years old. Norman Lear, who was three generations ahead of himself on every issue we care about.
Absolutely.
I mean, the
topics that he covered on his show, we'll talk about that next time, in honor of Norman Lear.
Okay.
Go to personalpac.org. That's PAC, personalpac.org. Call your legislators. Tell them they need to move with urgency, with a sense of urgency on parental notice. Have a great night, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. And I think I've got a surprise for you. We'll find out what that is tomorrow. Have a great evening. And Rick Unger is up next, everyone.